Welcome to Keith and the Girl. I'm Keith Malley.
I'm Chemda.
The mystery boxes are a hit, Chemda.
It's kind of scary. I think we need to shut it down.
And I'm packing some of these boxes, but each time I'm like, no, I want to keep this. I want to keep that.
You are the worst.
We're moving the studio, and we find a lot of Keith and the Girl memorabilia. So we have what we call the mystery box in the Keith and the Girl store.
Every mystery box will be different.
Everyone will be different, and everyone easily valued over $100. Go to keithandthegirl.com/store. You'll see exactly what we're talking about, but they're being shipped out right now. I'm very, very excited. All right. Also, Chemda, I'd like to mention this, is on Mira Merrick's show.
Yeah. Happily Never After.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so her show is about, you know, how many times she got married and divorced, and I came in and talked about my divorce, and my episode is called Double Dealing Pronouns and Craigslist Ads.
All
so
right.
I talked about the Craigslist ads that he posted, and just in general, some shit that happened during the marriage. And she's just so much fun to talk to.
Yeah.
I think I spilled a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's such a wonderful person.
These damaged people trick you, right?
Yeah. It's like, hey, he did this fucked up thing, right? And I'm like, yeah, why am I telling you this?
So if you want to hear more about Chemda's failed relationship and how she gets by barely, listen to Happily Never After.
And I hope you never write my biography, okay? This paraphrasing that Keith does is so scary.
People are enjoying, of course, the dad emails. Describe the dad emails, Henry.
Okay, so Keith's dad decided to email his ex-wife of 2 years, hey, what happened to the relationship with you and Keith? With you and Keith. So she forwarded it to Keith, like, hey, your dad's emailing me and I'm out of your family as of 2 years ago. Keith says, hey, can I write back to him as you? And then months of this continue where Keith pretends that he's his ex-wife, right, and the dad talks. And one of the quotes that stirred everybody is when Kat was fake hitting on him and he said, you sure make this old man's libido jingle.
Ugh.
Now, Christmas will never be the same at the Malley home. Thanks to Father Malley. Go to keithandthegirl.com/dad because what we did is what Andrea and Keith did is pulled out every time we talked about the dad emails so we can have one long podcast just talking about that timeline.
Yes, I see somebody hearing it now. First of all, there's about 7 hours of it between two parts.
That was shocking, right?
Yes. And somebody's writing like, I'm 2 minutes in and I'm already crying when you play your mom's voice message.
Oh, I know you're dead.
Yeah, oh, 2 minutes in. Pippa Mag says, I'm 19 minutes in and I agree with Keith 100%. The entire libido email was wrong, all of it, not just the last part. Let's forget the fact that he is a married man. Let's forget that. And that this is his son's ex-wife. Let's forget that.
Right.
This is the former daughter-in-law. At one time, he had a relationship with her that resembles a father-daughter relationship in that, quote, you aren't losing your son, you are gaining a daughter kind of way.
Mm.
I didn't think about it like this also. Just another layer. This just goes to show the role he sees himself playing in his son's life. That is to say, not as a father, but just as some power player. Not once in that email does he say, hey, Kat, I think of you as a daughter. Mm-hmm. The entire email is self-serving. It's very fucking gross.
You know, just when Keith thinks he has processed everything and there's not much more to think about in the layers of depth that Keith's dad is horrible, he's like, hey, guys, did you consider that Keith's dad is horrible in additional this way?
Right.
Here's the ones that you thought of. Here are the two that I thought of.
Oh, my God. How did you want your dad to let down Kat? You're a daughter to me. Oh, my God. Anyway, it's fucking... Today's guest. Oh, my Lord.
You missed him. We missed him.
I'd say strap in, but I don't know if that triggers.
Jesus, we're starting.
He was a political correspondent on Redacted Tonight. Yes, he was, wasn't he? Featured on the Hot Mess Comedy Hour, New York Times, LA Times, Huffington Post, your local police blotter. Featured on Comedy Central. Co-creator and host of 51st Jokes. These are all the places he's not allowed in. Chase Bank. The Hilton Hotels. He's been on 26 Keith and the Girl related episodes, meaning 21 Keith and the Girl shows, and also a Micah Fox episode that's in your VIP program. What's My Name About Being Bipolar with Ted Alexandro and his brother in your VIP program. Live shows. John F. O'Donnell.
Yeah.
Hey, man.
I am so excited to be here.
And I'm excited to do our first portable podcast. And this is a nice prison.
And I was like, how long is Keith's backhanded intro going to be before I can respond to it?
The show, we're getting ready. We're about to start. And John goes, okay, I'm ready. No personal questions. I have a thought on Felicity Huffman. Other than that.
Yeah, man.
So we'll get to everything. But the other day we were playing Joe Biden talking about Corn Pop, the gang member that when he was a guard at an all-black, in an all-black neighborhood, it was his job to make sure.
A lifeguard, not a guard.
Yeah. You know what? I feel like he's just a guard. I feel like he's those assholes that, you know, they check to make sure you're wearing swim trunks or something. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
but with
yeah.
attitude. Yeah. I picture that. Anyway, he said his job was to make sure black people that had pomade in their hair didn't go into the pool. And he saw somebody, Corn Pop, the leader of a gang.
Very specific job. yes. Your job title is white guy making sure black guy with pomade does not go into pool.
Not a problem. I have integrity and I take this job with great responsibility. He talks like my dad. He really does remind me of him. And he said, hey, get off that board. And Corn Pop goes, I'd rather just swim too much. And he goes, or I'll drag you off. And Corn Pop goes, okay, I'm going to kill you instead. And Joe Biden says, shit. But still, you have to get off. So anyway.
What's he going to have, a gun in his pocket? He's jumping into a pool.
So Corn Pop does get down. But then he shows that he has a rusty straight razor and he's going to kill him with it. And his buddies are going to help kill Joe also.
Honestly, Keith, I cannot believe you got all of it. Like, from the stammering and the stuttering, this is an amazing streamlined story that I'm interrupting.
Did he have the rusty straight razor in his swim trunks?
Underneath his tongue.
That's why it was rusty, because it was in the water. Oh, it was new before he went in.
Well, John Biden was like, remember back in the day how you would leave your your straight razor out in the rain so it'd get all rusty? I'm like, what? Like, yeah, they're stabbing you, but then there's lockjaw.
Oh, no. This is going to increase the infection.
Hi, everybody. Keith, what happened? Corn Pop? Oh, no. You got lockjaw, too. So he says, oh, no. I said to the only other white person there who happened to work there. He just starts naming where he goes, because he worked there, mechanic, pool filter, back downstairs, razors, chain. So his friend cut off a six feet. That's how you know the whole thing's weird too. Is because that's how my dad is, so specific about shit that happened so long ago. And then he cut off a 6 foot piece of chain link, just a piece, 6 feet piece, a 6 feet piece of chain that separated the shallow end of the pool from the large end of the pool.
That's the size of you, your length.
Right. So he's cutting that off in the pool. Okay. All right. Let's pretend that happened. Sure.
Sounds feasible. Sure.
Gives Joe Biden the chain and says, you go out there.
And then
there.
He goes, warriors, come out and play.
So he hands the chain to Joe Biden and says, you know, you get ready. So stupid. He says to Joe Biden, supposedly, you go out there and fight or you never get to come back here to work again.
Oh.
Okay. And Joe goes, and he was right. And then moves on.
Okay.
All right. So he goes out there with the chain. He's ready to die. He knows everybody has a straight razor. The Jets are ready to murder, right?
Man has to take a stand. And we're better than letting pomade go into the pool. I mean.
Murder. Yeah, murder.
And yesterday's show, you can hear the actual story from Joe, but I'm trying to make sense of it. So he goes out there and he goes, before I fight you, Corn Pop, I want to say something. I should have said, yes, get off that board. You can't have pomade. That's my job. And Corn Pop's like, you motherfucker, yeah? And he goes, but what I shouldn't have done was call you out in such a manner. And for that, I apologize. And Corn Pop looked me dead in the eyes. And he said, you apologize for the way you called me out? I accept. And he put the straight razor away.
Respect, you know.
The end.
The great diplomat.
Right.
Joe Biden.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T. Everything started playing.
I wonder if this incident is where like the resentment towards black people began. And he's like, years later, I'm going to write a crime bill that's going to disproportionately incarcerate black people. And we're going to get bipartisan consensus for it from both the Republicans and the Democrats.
You think so?
We're going to drop the word super predator. The P in predator stands for pomade. I don't know how, but I'm a fucking idiot. You probably can't beat Trump, which is terrifying.
So we're going to put this we're going to put this black person in jail for 5 years, Joe. And Joe's like, pomade?
Pomade?
Guanyin is listening live on YouTube. Biden has the storytelling skill of Grandpa Simpson.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's this old man entitled way of talking. It's exactly how my dad talks.
And Cody Allen is writing Corn Pop and Lock.
Yes.
Nice.
Corn Pop, a real person. His name was William L. Williams. Okay. The whole what am I? That's a real person. William L. Williams.
That's like if somebody's like, Joe, what was his name? He's like, William L. Williams.
Doubtfire. Doubtfire. Doubtfire, huh? Well, I'm stuck with that. So William L. Williams. He died in 2016. He was a gang member. The gang was the Romans. I'm not sure how he died, but it sounds like a gang
incident.
How did
he die?
Right.
Pomade and pool accident. The irony is dripping pomade into the art.
Former Wilmington Mayor Dennis Williams confirmed to CNN this weekend that Corn Pop was, quote, as real as the moon in the sky. Well, now I got to question that. That's another old way of talking. Sure as shooting, as real as the moon is in the sky. Okay. All right.
Just gives you poetry now.
Right. No, it is. I was saying how Joe Biden's in these debates and he's stuttering, he's stammering, he's calling Bernie Sanders the president. He's really out to lunch. His teeth are falling out and he's subtly putting him back in with his tongue. No exaggeration. I'm like, did he just dip chew? And then I figure out what he's doing. He's trying to be subtle. He said he looks like in Total Recall when Arnold Schwarzenegger's inside the big lady's head and the head. That's what it looked like. Now, where's your destination, ma'am? And during earlier in the month, he's at a town hall meeting and with CNN. And as he's talking, and I saw the video, his left eye starts slowly filling up with blood.
What?
His brain's leaking. This is the one tweet that Donald Trump is getting right. This guy is a mess.
Oh my God.
He starts filling up with blood and he turns his head a certain way and you see.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, how do you explain that away?
Yeah.
You
know what I mean?
This is how angry I am and how things are going right now.
What's going on with your eye? Did I tell you about Corn Pop?
Yeah.
You did. Record player? What? A straight razor.
That's the danger of pomade.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Wow.
Anyway. Anyway, Jay Fod's here. He's going to tell us what he thinks of Joe Biden. And is he really insane?
Yeah, Joe Biden. Dude, it's so sad. It seems like so much of the establishment wants to get behind him.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, Keith, you were with him until...
I was with him when he ran for vice president. He seemed very together for me. Now, maybe I just got lucky and I saw one debate, but I saw a vice presidential debate where I thought he could be president. And it's over a decade now. I understand that. But still, he's a broken toy. He's a robot malfunction. It's strange. All right. Last time that Jay Fod was here, 2 years ago. Right? Or longer, 2015.
Wow. What the fuck?
Holy shit.
Why?
Well, I don't want to brag, but my life has had some ups and downs in the past few years.
Now, J-Fod
from what I've heard, I think I'm the only one that's been through any struggles amongst the three of us in the past few years.
Well, I'd say you've had the struggles of five people, but you are, right?
I love that Keith appropriates symptoms of different mental illnesses onto me that I don't even have. I'm like, Keith, there is plenty to work with here.
Well, you're in his crazy bag. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And are you okay with this wall foam? Is the shapes fucking with you?
Not well, now they are.
So Jay Fod hasn't been shy about having manic episodes before. And you seem, tell me if I'm right, that
Always tell him if he's right.
You do have, first of all, no, that was the end of it. Tell me I'm right. You have these same characters that pop up. It's not like just one day you're a spy. You were talking about, was it in Dublin and you broke into a hotel room, but you had to. You're hired by the CIA, but you know.
Not by the CIA. I mean, I was hiding from the CIA.
I was hiding from the CIA doing James Bond stuff, but whoever you worked for couldn't buy your room. So you broke into somebody's house the way Bond does. And even though you knew you were breaking into somebody's room, I mean, you decided to take a shower. You know, James Bond is always fresh. But working for or against the CIA is a character that keeps coming up. Having to fight the big banks, Chase specifically, is a topic that keeps coming up.
Well, Chase is telling you that they're chasing you.
Right. Being right.
So, God, I know it.
Yeah.
Ready, J5? Chase.
Yeah, if the bank was called like slow, relaxing massage, I guess I wouldn't be so paranoid about that.
Sometimes you would think you're God or a great Rastafarian, right?
Yeah, there's a few recurring delusions.
That's interesting.
It's weird because I know how absurd and insane those delusions are when I'm regular, but like, right. Why do I keep believe in them.
Yeah. Now, I don't want to be a broken record. TV, radio. But whenever you have another manic episode, which you did fairly recently, it's always when you think you can self-medicate. Am I right?
No, sort of. This last time around, I wasn't self-medicating, but I was really committed to this like very regimented but alternative treatment plan. And basically, the main difference
was... Who told you about the plan?
This guy, this specialist in the UK who specializes in treating bipolar disorder.
Why are you in the UK?
And
you can't follow up in the UK.
You don't have to be in the UK, I assume.
It was like a teleconference, like Skyping sessions and stuff like that.
You can trick people in Skyping sessions, yeah. You know what I mean?
No, I was being
actually,
very honest.
Isn't it scary when you're in a manic episode to watch a screen talk to you?
Right. But no one was there.
No, I wasn't. You guys suck. I wasn't manic when I started the treatment, assholes. Okay. Right. I was like depressed and like fucking like for a long time. Okay, there's the timeline. I'll go through the timeline a little bit. But what I want to say is I basically was working with him and it was working for a while. I was working for like 9 months and I was
what kind of treatment is it?
Less carbs, right?
Yeah. It's mostly carbs and Reiki. No carbs, lots of Reiki, energy, you know. Okay, basically the main thing is and this does work for some people. It just didn't work for me, which is unfortunate, that instead of lithium carbonate, which I'm on now, and I feel like I found a good dosage that works for me, and I'm fine with that. And I have to do a lot of other things to, I think, if I live a really healthy lifestyle, I think that kind of works for me. I can balance. It's like I can handle the lithium more. But anyway, instead of lithium carbonate, which does have, can have a really robust side effect profile and has to be relatively close to the toxic level in order to
be effective,
to be in the therapeutic range. That's why you have to get blood tests and stuff like that. Instead of that, people will take lithium orotate, which is a different version of it that has less elemental lithium in it, but apparently is more bioavailable across the blood-brain barrier. So it doesn't have the side effect profiles, but it does have the calming effects. And it's not an FDA-approved thing. It's more in the supplement world and stuff like that. So there's a lot of anecdotal evidence that it works, but it might work better for, say, somebody with like a less rock star version of this illness than I have.
It's all flattering stuff, right? James Bond, God.
Well, it's more IRA agent than James Bond.
Right. But,
it sounds like the difference between CBD and THC.
I guess.
Like that, because it's
but in the reverse,
same,
yeah.
It's the same. It's from the same place, but adjusted a little bit. One is more mild, it seems.
Yeah, maybe, but like... It's weird to...
But why were you changing your medication in the first place?
Because when I had the episode before that and I was on the amount of lithium carbonate that I was on, I was barely able to function. I was so miserable for so long. We're talking like a depression that was lasting from late November, you know, December of 2017, well into the summer, even fall of 2018. And basically all I could do in D.C., was I would just be able to get to work and do my job. And then I was doing like a lot of self-isolating. I was probably weighed like, you know, at least 20, 25 pounds more than I do now.
Why? And what makes that make you an isolated person? What makes it be okay to go to work but not do anything beyond that?
Well, sometimes it's someplace you have to go. Okay. You know, you'll do it. And and I needed to go do it. But it was, what was kind of crazy is I was so miserable that I was still like writing and performing like political comedy, which was kind of crazy to have to do when I was feeling so terrible about myself. But it's really, it's, that one was, it was processing a lot of emotional pain and a lot of shame and disappointment, because the, that manic episode, you know, blew up this really great relationship I had with my, you know, girlfriend that I was living with. And, you know, she was there for me for a long time until she couldn't be anymore. And it was, it made me feel terrible. And then there was no, you know, there was no space for her during that time to express to me how she was feeling and what she was going through and how, you know, and how painful it was for her and how disappointed and betrayed she felt and things like that. And because she had to hold space for me. And then I'm back in DC after the fact, she's back in New York. I'm depressed. And we did open up that dialogue. And I was more than happy to, you know, listen to her talk about anything she had to process, but it was so painful. It was like me being depressed, and then on top of that, me feeling terrible and having to, you know, hear all about it.
What was some of the stuff?
Well, just that I destroy this life that we built for
when
each
you,
other.
When you switch from one drug to the other, and it's not practical, I guess, if you have to work, but now, if you ever decide to do that again, do you think there's a way that you're into a 30 or 14 day program where you're really in the building and somebody could keep an eye on you? When you change your medication and flip out, something bad happens.
Yeah. I'm not going to not take this medication. I'm committed to it. Okay. 1,000%. Basically what happened that last episode, let's say the summer of 2017, I, under the care of a psychiatrist, was like, look, this lithium carbonate is making me feel awful, the amount that you have me on. And he agreed. He's like, okay, we'll transition you off of that and onto Lamictal. And I did the tapering down of the lithium, the tapering up of the Lamictal, and we switched it. And then unfortunately I became really manic, because sometimes, not for everybody, but for sometimes when you start going off the lithium, it can actually create a manic episode, because it's almost like there's like a dam in your head that's like keeping thoughts and energy behind it, and then it kind of floods forward, you know?
So what flooded forward?
Just the same manic shit. Like, you know, I get these weird, you know, grandiose delusions. I'm thinking things like I talk about, the recurring ones are weird. It's like reincarnation of the Rastafari Messiah Jah, which would be so disappointing for the entire Rasta community.
You think that person wouldn't need glasses?
Yeah. You know? Yeah, exactly. You think he'd be able to ride a bicycle with confidence? Whatever. You know? I just wrote this thing where I go, like, I'm just imagining just being in front of, being like, hello, Rastas, it is I. The reincarnation of Haile Selassie. Stop booing. I know I'm not what you were expecting. And it's like, oh. It's fucked up. But that, and then like.
And then what's your job when you're the king of the Rastas? What do you have to do that day?
Well, I don't know. Everything, for whatever reason, like black people.
You're God and you're like, I know I should be doing something.
Yeah, there's got to be something to this. Honestly, my whole life just becomes about, part of it just becomes, there's a strong desire. I'm like, I just need to be smoking weed all the time. Which for me.
Oh shit, I'm manic.
Yeah. I was just going to say, for Chemda is fine, but for me, it's an absolute disaster.
And weed has put you in a bad place before. So of all the people you would pick,
yeah,
somebody who must need weed for his religion.
Yeah, maybe it's because I'm resentful that I can't smoke weed. So, like, I don't know. I don't know what it is. But I do know that the dude in the UK who is the bipolar specialist, his website looks insane. Which might be a red flag.
Pills. Everything's flashing and blinking. How do you find a guy in the UK, like, of all places?
Well, I basically was just scouring online every place to try to find some sort of alternative option, because I was feeling so shitty, right. and I didn't know what to do, and it really felt at the time like I was gonna have to resign myself to living this very, very reduced version of myself that was having trouble remembering things, was having word retention issues, didn't feel engaged, didn't feel creative. It was terrible. And I don't know, it's hard to parse if it was completely the medication or also the depression, if it was both things. It's always hard to know which thing it is.
But this first of the two recent manic episodes led you into a mental hospital.
Let's see. No, this the first of the two that we're talking about, these most recent two, it did not. I kind of did. I left.
You were just visiting. Yeah. Like Monopoly.
Well, kind of. I was in like observation for 48 hours in like the psych emergency room.
What landed you there?
Being awesome. I'm just kidding. it was honestly like friends just brought me there. But I was
in
New
York. Like my dog knows when it's being taken to the vet? Like, do you know where you're being taken to?
No. It was actually my cousin Mike and my friend Max. And my cousin said that we were going to get Thai food.
Little buddy.
And I remember thinking, I was like, Mike really likes Italian food. Like, I don't think, why would he take me to Queens to get Thai food?
I mean, I just went directly to Queens. There's a good, ethnic community there.
That's true. That's true.
And then what? And then opens the door and go, just kidding. The Thai food's in the hospital today.
Yeah. The Thai food. Just keep going. The pad Thai's in there. Yeah, keep going.
Thai food is here. Doctors, Thai food.
This is a really weird looking Thai food restaurant.
Very clean.
Yeah, but then for whatever reason, I don't know if my menu was starting to wind down at that point or maybe not, but for whatever reason, when he was there, when we were outside the place, I acquiesced and just was like, okay, yeah, I'll go here. But then what happened was they put me in observation for like 48 hours. So, and then that's when they determine if you're going to be admitted to get a bed, right. You know, so I,
do you want to be admitted? Because if you didn't, it's pretty easy to not be admitted.
Well, I was going to say like I was real slick to not get admitted. Yeah, but,
don't want you.
Yeah, no, I guess you're right. But no, I didn't get admitted because I didn't want to get admitted. Right. But I just was, and there's always a weird thing too. Initially, sometimes I can really get some mileage out of the fact that I'm a comedian because I'm always like, I'm a comedian, look me up. Like, you know what I mean? Right. I'm on Redacted Tonight or whatever.
And here's my clips.
Yeah, there's a whole playlist on YouTube. And then they'll like watch them and then like, sometimes the doctor would be like, oh, it was really good. It was really funny.
Now, you leave the hospital. Do you immediately go out to perform stand-up? I know Andrea met you at the Creek in the Cave. Was that the same day?
I have no idea. I don't think so.
Okay.
But I do know what I immediately did was in a pocket in my jeans that they didn't check or that I had on the whole time, like that, you know, that little kind of like pocket.
Now we know what it's for. What's it for?
It's for a joint that I kept in there the whole fucking time I was in the hospital and smoked immediately upon leaving.
And again, that sets you off.
Yeah, it basically makes whatever's going on in my head, just my thoughts race even more. And I don't have the mechanism to realize like I'm on the drug. I just believe everything that I'm thinking. So like if you're thinking weird thoughts, Chemda, on weed or whatever, your mind's traveling or however it's going, you're just kind of like, oh, wow, I'm looking, you can kind of look at it with more of your rational mind and like watch that version of your mind or
what? I'm just following a thought. So I can like, my trips are just like, well, I'm maybe upset about my parents doing this thing. This is a long time ago, but like, and then I wonder why that happens. And so I replay some stuff and I see their perspective more and I follow a trail until I understand something a little bit better. That's really some of the stuff that happens to me.
I had a hidden camera in Henda's house, and I saw her. She was doing weed by herself, just walking around. Why? Why?
Yeah, basically.
Why?
Just why?
Interesting.
But you go out there. That is interesting that you forget. You just smoked, and you're like, nope, this is all real too. Then let me get more of this honest juice.
Yeah, I don't have that narrative distance. It's really
but this,
weird.
To me, it makes sense, the stuff that your mania brings. I think like that kind of trip makes sense because a lot of times you are on mic in front of an audience just like Jesus and Muhammad and Jah, and you are relating.
Well, they were acoustic, but yeah.
Right. mic check. Wash everyone's feet.
Who's ready to see Jesus turn this water into wine? Please welcome to the stage your next Messiah for the evening.
But I do see you as a person who takes on the responsibility of telling people the cycle that they're in, the situation that they're in ways that they're not like aware of. You want to like wake people up to what's coming in the future if we keep acting this way. I feel like that's very much a religious leader of sorts. Like, and you are, you have this experience where people say, oh, you opened my mind to this, or you're saying what I'm thinking about. You are giving us the information that will help save us, or whatever it is. I think you are getting that feedback, and that it doesn't surprise me that you are a leader and a god in your mania.
God, that's very interesting insight that I'm not exactly sure how to process. Yeah, maybe there is that, and that's a really nice thing to say. Thank you. But I don't know. But I do know that at this point, I really am going to be focusing moving forward on doing comedy and trying to create a community around mental illness and mental health issues. At this point, that's it. I mean, I did 5 years on this show on Redact tonight. I'm very proud of that work. I'm glad I delved into all that political satire and stuff like that. But I've talked about mental illness. I've talked about bipolar. I've talked about it somewhat in my stand-up and on podcasts. I've never done an entire show about it. And that's what I'm doing. That's what I'm going to do now.
That's exciting.
Yeah. You're definitely brokenhearted, it seems, about this relationship you were in. Did she not want to be in anymore because you were so withdrawn? Or did Ja have sex with somebody else?
Well, I mean,
okay,
you know, yeah. Well, no, she'd already been pushed to the brink, and then I met a transgender woman on the street, and we hooked up like within 20 minutes of meeting each other.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, because she came back to my house, and we made out, and then she jerked me off from the kitchen. Mm-hmm. You know, but it wasn't even like. At the time, I just had so much sexual energy, no outlet for it. It didn't feel like to me, even like, it just almost felt like it was like a maintenance sort of thing.
You know, that's another recurring thing, is that your mania has a sexual content to it. And do you connect with people with sex? Like, do you see sex as one of the connecting things with people?
Well, I think for whatever reason, the people that I'm around and I've been friends with start seeing that something's weird and different, but people that I don't know, I find this different sort of crop of people that find me interesting and engaging and charismatic, and sometimes there's like a lot of sexual chemistry that happens, and it's weird. It's like I become more, I guess, sexually desirable when I'm manic, which is also kind of a mind fuck for when you're kind of normal again.
Maybe you're more confident. As a god, you're confident.
Yeah, maybe. You know? Maybe it's confidence. I don't know what it is, but like, okay, this last episode, I got arrested 5 times or whatever, and
you'd break into houses, break into cars.
Well, I mean, define break in. I mean, if the doors are unlocked, right. You know what I mean.
Right, walked in. And
I could still define it if you want. I'm pretty sure they defined it for you though.
Yeah, but I will say what I wanted to say though. Before I talk about that, is that I one of the days when I got released from the holding cell.
You want to thank God for being white 5 times, 5 times on mania.
Yeah, I'll tell you, when I was in there, I was really like one of the only white people there, you guys. That whole black people mass incarceration. It's
there's something to it.
I think there's something to it. So I go out.
He's walking past people. 13th Amendment, right, guys?
13th
right?
Amendment. Who's with me? But it was weird because one time when I was in, one of the times when I was in there, I remember being like, oh, wow, there's some older, because there were some older black dudes with like long gray dreadlocks in there. I'm like, oh, wow, they may have gotten arrested just so they could kind of get a glimpse of me because they want to see.
You know. And they hope to hit the right jail out of everywhere in America. Never mind other countries.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm taking a big risk, but tonight, I got a gut feeling.
They got lucky. But they could just sense it. You know, there's a connection, Keith.
Do you get yourself in trouble in jail or in holding? Do you go up to people and bless them?
No, I don't know why I don't. No, I thank God. But I did. I was so manic when I was actually in jail for this 2 weeks. I was in jail for 2 weeks.
Wow, that's a while.
Yeah, yeah.
For what? In your state of mind?
14 days. Me and Felicity Huffman.
What did you do? Things.
Yeah, I just really wanted my kid to get into college.
Right. And I mean? It wasn't your kid. That's the problem. Yeah, yeah. I saw a kid and I picked him up and I.
What did I?
It was just a imagine it is you and some woman who tried to get her kid into college.
He's watching Felicity Huffman. You know these people that watch the news sometimes. They're like, mm-hmm, I get it.
I get it.
No, you don't. You're my roommate and you're broke. You're not paying for anybody in college.
Yeah. What did I do?
For the 14 days, what put you in there?
Well, I mean, out of context, it sounds weird. Like, yeah. You know, maybe I stole some banana bread from Cosi. You okay. know what I mean?
But 2 weeks for that?
We've all stole banana bread from Cosi. I mean, we didn't even know they sold it. We thought it was just there like the peanuts at Five Guys.
Wait, I will tell you guys all of the things that led to that. But one thing that I wanted to say is that, and talk about the charismatic thing with this, with sex stuff, right? I get out of jail one day, there's this... This woman is hanging out. She has like the same kind of blue wristband on them, and she'd recently been to jail or something like that. She didn't know where she was going to go, wherever. I was like, oh, just come hang out with me. Well, we did it. Immediately she did. And then we were sitting in the park, and then there was this other girl that was just sitting there reading. She came over to say hello. And then I was like, oh, let's just all hang out. Let's go back to my place. It'll be cool. And there she's like, yes. So suddenly I'm in a cab with two girls. Like, I'm in the car for like 20 minutes. And then we're hanging out for like a little while.
Wow, how'd you find two women who have no place to go or live? How'd you get them to your place?
The other one had places to live.
Oh, one of them did. Good.
The other person had a place to live. And then within 45 minutes, this nice slingy lady was giving me a blowjob, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this doesn't excite me. I don't know if you think you just told me porn, but...
No, I'm saying that stuff doesn't happen to me on the regular when I'm not manic.
I know what you mean.
You know?
Are you walking around...
That's such a FOMO experience of your relationship, though, which is what a lot of women are afraid of, because that is how guys in history have responded to monogamy.
Really?
Yeah. I want this because normally I can't have it, and now I'm going to miss out on this even though I have something at home.
No, that's not how I feel about it. I mean, I'm just talking about the experience. That's not something that I'm like, oh, I wish that could be happening all the time, because it was like...
But only until it happens. And then you're like, wow, this is what I want to happen.
No, I want to be in a relationship.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm mistaken. I don't...
No, I'm just saying my take on it.
I just had two chicks. I didn't like it.
Right.
No, I liked it.
But I want you back.
Okay, so I got
to... So you're walking around the streets, slinging around this bread, right?
Yeah.
Are you carrying it with you? Like, how did you get caught?
Oh, okay. Well...
If you just tell me, it's easier.
That's Keith's slogan.
I mean, fair enough, but you're right.
Help me help you.
Fair enough, you're right. And I want to give good podcast. The thing is, it's like working through my mind, me being insane and trying to filter it out in a linear narrative.
Right. I just think for 2 weeks you were thinking about what you did.
Yeah. Okay. I went in there. I thought I had money on like some card. I ordered a flatbread, and then it turned out that my card didn't work, and I figured that it was the government was cutting off my funds because they wanted to like ice me out.
You said ordered a flatbread, like a flatbread pizza?
Yeah.
Like something they have to make hand to you?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. It's a sandwich.
No, they have a few flatbreads there. It's basically it's a really, really shitty version of pizza that they have.
That costs more money.
Yeah. So I was like, ooh, I want that.
And how was the government messing with your card?
They just like froze all my assets.
Okay. Also another one of your characters.
Why do I believe this shit? It's so crazy.
Right. All right, go ahead. Well, one of your characters knows that you're on this earth to make what? JFOD coins. It's a form of Bitcoin. By the way, thank God you're named JFOD. Like, it really fits, right?
No, that's a real chicken and egg fucking philosophy thing you just fucking said right there, Keith.
So the government says, you know what? I know you and the big banks, blah, blah, blah. We're going to fuck with your card today. And you said, Cosi, you're in on it, so fuck you.
No, I was so pissed off at this time that I couldn't get that flatbread, and I was like hungry. I was like, oh, you're not going to give me the flatbread? And I had some sort of garbage bag with me.
Sure.
I just started filling it up with stuff.
Oh, wow. From blatantly. Cosi.
Blatantly. Just like, just not like a kind of sneaking right. anything. I'm just filling up the garbage bag. I'm like, what are you going to do? I'm taking this stuff. And then what's crazy is they were really smart. They locked me in. They went outside and locked me in. I've never seen that happen. I didn't know that was an option.
The Russian people, other customers out of the store, they're like...
It was very late. It was towards the end. I think I was the only one in there.
That was your first mistake.
Right. There's so many mistakes.
Hey, guys. And did they give you an out like... sir, are you good, or you need to register? And you're like, no, thanks.
I think the way I was acting, they were just like mouth agape, like, what the fuck? And then they're and they just got out, and then they locked me in.
You know what's so funny? Now, you're not in the right head, but if you had your wits about you, just go, you're on a reality show. Ha ha. Okay. Here's your food bag. Bye. But you're too messed up. Yeah.
Man, I only thought of that.
Always keep a GoPro on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You fell for it. Yeah. No money for you.
Yeah, surprise. You're on Where'd Your Banana Bread Go? The new show.
You're on my new show. See ya!
But again, this makes sense. It would make sense that you try to pay for something and when it doesn't go through, that the government is involved in it and shutting your shit down. Because you're on a show like Redacted Tonight, because you're always going like, this is what the government is telling you. This is how I know that they're lying. And you follow that path and show. So like, all these weird things that happen actually do happen in real life, and they are spying on us.
Yeah,
and they are like, so to go into that head when you're suddenly stuck somewhere and you're not in your straight mind, I don't think that's so out of left field.
I think you're right. I think that's a really good point because, or at least it doesn't help when I'm super immersed in all this political stuff, because the last story that I did for Redacted Tonight really did throw me for a loop. And I think if I was maybe spinning out anyway, or it was that definitely contributed to it.
I think if I knew as much as you did about the systems and the fucked up stuff that happens from the top trickling down to the bottom, I think it would be very, very difficult to hold that and live a normal life and go day to day when things fuck up a little bit. That would absolutely trigger, hey, I know where this is coming from because I follow the path that people don't have time to uncover, but I happen to be obsessed with because my mind can retain this much information.
After I heard about Corn Pop, I took a 2-week vacation from the news.
It's true. I mean, I tried to follow politics for a little while after Trump got elected, and you stay mad all the time, and you stay like, it feels defeated. It feels like you're not in control of your own life. It feels like, you know, you kind of learn about the cage that you're in more and more. And it's very, very scary. And I don't know how to balance that and live a carefree life and understand that, like, I don't really have as much power and to be okay with that. And how to navigate that, I think, is very, very difficult. So to be immersed in it and to be a person who retains that information so well that you can go, this is where this came from, and things unlock like you're a computer in your head when something comes up, I think that's terrifying on a regular basis.
Yeah, I think I'd like to tell myself that I could compartmentalize it and not get upset and have narrative distance to that. But I think you're right. For a long time, it did make me really angry and sometimes depressed. And it is hard to have that. It is hard to have that distance. And it's the sort of thing where it's not just that I was doing it because like I was obsessed or could retain it all. I had the time to do it because that's what my job was, you know?
Yeah, like, but it was your job because you can do it. That's a chicken and egg also,
yeah,
but part of your passion, and that is how you got yourself into that.
Yeah. But the last story that I did was about the NSA operatives freelancing for the United Arab Emirates, using some of our newest hacking tools to help them spy on human rights activists and then also incidentally collect Americans' information. And what I found so frustrating about this story was that Reuters, which is one of the main news wires, did a huge deep dive investigative report on this and put that out, and none of the major media outlets picked it up.
Yeah, you know? You ever see like crazy people and they're like what we call crazy and they're yelling about some stuff, right? And sometimes you go, they really could be telling us something.
It can't all be wrong, right?
But you know, it is crazy out there and it is shitty and it is like a complete it feels like you're being shit on all the time if you really know the truth constantly, right? All the time and in every direction of your life. It's depressing.
Do you ever say to the host, Lee Camp, do you ever say, hey, I know why you had me do that story on hacking and I get it. I get it. Wink, wink. Just be honest with me, brother.
No, because at that time, he's already like, John, you're manic. He's like, I want to help you. And I'm like, I'm not manic, Lee. And he's like, got to take some time off from work, dude. Right. He's been very great and very supportive, you know.
Well, he has to let you go. Do you try to work with it and he just can't work with you anymore?
It just becomes like I can't even sit still in the office, you know? Like I'm not able to be focused enough to read everything I have to read and figure out how to write it and stuff.
Well, you have a homeless period. Is this based on losing the job? Or just you just let your apartment go?
Wait, when?
Were you homeless fairly recently?
Ish. You know what I mean? I had a
home. In between homes?
I had a home, but I wasn't like allowed to go into it because there was a restraining order from like the dentist that lived next door.
Really?
You know, that happens to everybody.
Did you have to check up on the dentist? Like maybe he's a Nazi dentist? Like what did you have to go?
He got the good gas.
Right.
It was a she dentist. I don't even know her. I've never even seen her. But
what'd you do?
Okay, I got the first time I got arrested was because I snuck into this like person's house, this laundry room, because I was like really freezing. I thought I was gonna like die or something like that, right? So I moved this big steel pipe and then was able to somehow get in that back door.
Did you still have your apartment at the time?
Yes, I did.
Why didn't you go there?
Because I earlier in the day was playing soccer by myself at the soccer field, and I took off my jacket and my keys and my phone, and I put them like in the back of the goal, and then I went to a coffee shop where like I stole a bag of coffee or like for some coffee beans, and then I went to the tennis court and started yelling about how Occupy DC 2.0 was starting, and then I would like stop when people walk by and be like, also I'm teaching tennis lessons
on the soccer court.
Yeah, which is like, I was on the tennis court. But still, that's such a weird juxtaposition of information,
right?
You know, just to be like, Occupy DC 2.0, let's work on the consistency of our second serve.
Okay, timeshares, are you looking for timeshares?
Timeshares, in here's timeshares. So I went back to the soccer field and all that stuff was gone.
Okay.
I lost my keys and everything. I got stolen.
Well, it sounds like hours later, right?
Yeah, yeah. It was unreasonable for me to think that they would still be there. You know what I mean? It is like a city. All right, so can you believe it? So then I just decided to buy a bunch of alcohol and packs of cigarettes and hang out with...
How'd you have money?
I still have my wallet.
Oh, I thought you left your wallet in jail.
No, not the wallet. I still have my wallet and ID. And then I ended up hanging out with a bunch of local homeless folks that like to drink, and we all got drunk. And
are they good conversationalists?
At the time, they are. Right. You know what I mean?
Well, I think they're all having their own conversation.
Maybe.
But we're all going through something, you know.
But like, do you talk about, you know, civilization and how us workers don't get it? And it's all, yes, nights are cold, but you're free. What do you talk about?
Do you get philosophical?
Yeah.
It's
all bullshit. Like, you guys repeat that a lot, I bet.
There's a lot of me, there's part of me just sort of being in my head, perceiving that they understand me and know who I am better than other people.
Do you explain to them the poor distribution of wealth?
I think they know about that.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know what? I don't want to just make something up, so I'm not sure. I can't really remember.
I imagine if I'm homeless, I do a lot of talking about those giant TV screens at subway stops. I'm sleeping next to a giant fucking TV screen. Fuck you. I imagine a lot of talk would be about that.
Yeah, man. So then after that.
Yeah, Keith, amateur. Go ahead.
Keith, that's day one.
So then I'm like really cold and I can't get into my place. So I'm looking for some shelter. And
are we going to go back to the dentist thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
The dentist it's all connected.
Why can't you get into your place? Because you don't have your keys.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
All right.
And you don't live with your...
Well, my roommate, already a strained relationship, because that's another story. But she's like, she's sleeping. She's a teacher, has to wake up early. And for some reason, I remember being like, ooh, I don't want to bother her. Mm. So I remember knocking very lightly, but knowing there was no chance. And she would sleep with earplugs and a mask and stuff because we were kind of on a loud street. So that didn't work. So then I walk around, have some interaction with some people whose house I knocked on who were like, you can't come in, but here's a woman's size small white fleece jacket that you can wear but not zip or whatever. So
that's
I got that.
Nice.
It was nice, something. And then I go next door and I see that there's like this back door where there's this steel pipe on a diagonal, and I move the pipe and push the door and it opens. And I'm like, oh, this is... And whenever I would break into a place, immediately my thought process would be like, I'm supposed to be in here. This is some sort of safe house because there's some sort of secret network working for me in some capacity. It's so strange.
Do you realize that only after you break in or even before? Do you see, like, I see how it's discolored on the wall? That means this is my safe house.
No, it's not color-coded system. Okay. But I don't know. I don't know if it's leading up to it. You know what I mean? Right. I'm not sure. So then I'm in there. And it's this little laundry room. So I'm breaking in, but just like a little bit. I'm barely breaking into the house.
It's the worst advice to give you to live in the present. Because you're like, I should be here.
Yeah. Live in the past where you were sane and functioning as a person. Live there. So I'm in there and there's a washer and dryer stacked in there. Very small room. And there's a lot of other stuff in there. It's kind of like very packed in there. And I open the dryer and there's a bunch of clothes in there. I'm like, oh, this is good. This is clothes left behind
for
me.
Job provides.
Yeah. Job provides. There's clothes left behind for me so I can change my appearance and get off the grid. Yeah. And the fact that they were all like static clingy and stuff like that, I thought it was some sort of like anti-NSA surveillance technology. I swear to God, that was...
To help you out.
Yeah, like I would put them on and then the facial recognition software couldn't fucking find me.
Regular face off.
Yeah, it's good stuff. But it was weird. I wasn't wearing it on my face or whatever. Right. So then I put on this Umbro track jacket and this like Adidas track pants.
Nice.
I'm looking pretty sweet. Yeah. You know what I mean? And then I was like, oh, okay.
I mean, it makes sense. It's his size or whatever. You know, it's like, well, this was here for me.
You know what? It wasn't my size.
Okay. I'm trying.
I know. Thank you. You're so sweet.
But my boys are in a hurry sometimes and they mess up missions.
It was like a large or extra large. I think it was extra large. So it was swimming. I was swimming in it. And so I'm putting that on. But then this is...
You ever during any of these manic episodes get access to a gun?
No.
Okay. I don't know.
No. That's probably good, but...
Probably.
Yeah. Let's go with probably with a capital P on that. You're
like, I know they put fake bullets in this, so batter up.
Oh, God. So anyway, but then I'm thinking, all right, if somebody, you know, finds me or arrests me or something, I can't have any ID or anything on me. So I'm like, I should just take my wallet out and I take all my bank cards, everything, money, put it down on the ground in the place. Mm-hmm. My ID is right there and leave. So, you know.
The cops put it together?
Yeah. I was going to say. Anybody out there, if you're planning on breaking an entry in any capacity for whatever reason, consider not leaving your photo ID behind.
They don't got to call up Mindhunter detectives? They find
No, they didn't have to call Mindhunter. And leave your ID behind if you want to put the local CSI unit out of business because you're making crime too easy to solve. Otherwise,
so where did they find you?
They didn't. Well, I guess they kind of did. And then I was walking outside. It was really, really cold, even in the tracksuit, you guys. And so there was like this white SUV in the driveway there. And I was like, well, let's see if this is open. And it was open.
Right.
And I went in there.
Everything's working out.
And I was just in there, and I was like finally feeling relaxed. And I was in there for a while. I'm not sure how long, but I don't know. Maybe the neighbors or somebody saw that I was in there.
What borough were you in?
The borough of Washington, D.C.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Because these are not like a laundromat, a car. What the fuck?
That's crazy. I was in our nation's capital. Mm.
And did they find you in that car?
Yeah, they found me in the car. It was locked. And I was in there and the cops are like knocking. They're like, get out of this car. Get out of the car.
Did they say the door's locked? And you go, well, then it's not meant to be for you.
Yeah.
That's got to be scary.
I more like pretended to ignore them by just pulling the sun visor down. And then there was also a side little sun visor. You don't see those too much. You know, so I was able to put the one on the side.
Can I say something to your ex? Take him back.
Yeah.
He's fucking hilarious.
That was so mean, Keith. Or how about, forget about my ex. How about my new? You got to be out there somewhere, lady. I'm on lithium now. I'm good. I'm good.
That's like a third date conversation, right? You wait.
Oh, God. It's like a 12th date. I don't even know. It's like, hi, I'm like a G-rated version of Ted Bundy. We're going to be cool.
So the cops finally get you out of the car. Do they have to break a window?
Dude, it's worse than that. Like, so I wouldn't get out for a long time. And then
a long time.
Yeah. And what some dude take, then one of the cops takes an axe and he just starts hammering at the windshield, hammering it until all of the glass like explodes in my face and my eyeballs start bleeding. No, I'm just kidding. Like Joe Biden's eye, but way worse. Network, I'm just like, oh God. No, I just unlocked the door after a while. And then they arrested me.
Did they treat you rough?
Actually, when I unlocked the door and gently and was like, oh, okay, okay.
I'm okay.
It's okay.
I'm good.
I'm good. I'm good. And I don't remember it being rough.
Okay. Do you complain in the car? Like, what do you even have me here for?
No, because then once I got handcuffed in the car, I was like, oh, the DC Metropolitan Police are protecting me. Mm-hmm. This is a whole ruse to keep like the feds or the CIA from. What the fuck?
Is it odd that you've never been in the, you know, the Illuminati headquarters? Like, how could, never once for a meeting. Try to remember that
part. It is kind of odd. And how come all these years of the IRA, never a handler? Right. With the Irish Republican Army, never, no dead drop?
I got to figure out every mission myself.
Yeah, no darknet communique.
Your mission, should you choose to make it up.
Yeah. Should you choose to conceive it? That's so funny. You know, because it's like, yeah, that's what it's like me, John F. O'Donnell, the IRA get up and go kid, so taking the initiative.
So you got taken to jail a few times.
Yeah, because a lot of times, well, that time I got taken to, first I got taken to CPEP, which I can't remember what CPEP, what it stands for, but okay. It's basically like holding area, kind of like a hospital for people before they're either going to go to jail or going to go to a more permanent hospital.
Okay.
So that first time I got arrested by the police, brought to CPEP, then brought to PIW.
Are you one of these
Comprehensive
guys?
Psychiatry Emergency Program.
Are you one of these guys in the hospital?
Yeah, sounds like fun, right?
You're in the hospital and there's cops around you?
Yeah, there's some cops there.
Okay.
But there's also doctors.
Are you handcuffed to the bed?
No.
Okay. So they didn't see you as a danger?
No, no.
Which is offensive, right? You know karate, I'm sure.
Yeah. I mean, I played high school tennis. I got some karate moves. I'm sure that translates. That's so, okay. So I'm there, and then they brought me to PIW, which is Psychiatric Institute of Washington, which is like a psych hospital. So, you know, it's not fun or great to be there. But the food is actually pretty good, which you never really...
Nobody yelps them.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And what's so unfortunate is I was, before I got sick this time, I worked so hard to get well. And we didn't get to go through everything that I did in that other regiment. Mm-hmm. But that's okay. Maybe we will. But I worked so hard to get well. And I was finally feeling good and finally feeling like myself and feeling healthy and feeling confident and feeling optimistic. And I was about to be taking like the first vacation I would have taken a long time to see a good friend of mine in Seattle, and it was going to be this great week with her. And all instead of that happening, I ended up, you know, in CPEP and then in the Psychiatric Institute of Washington for a week, getting out of there, connecting with this woman who was going through some weird stuff, but we really, you know, just hung out, and that was a really tumultuous, messed up situation where then we hung out with her friend who was really manic. She found out where I worked and didn't like where I worked, and she had got us beers, but then I got upset and I started like throwing the bottles into the street, and then like the ambulance came and I got sort of taken again.
When an ambulance shows up all of a sudden, do you know it's for you?
Always.
Right. Like the way I get into an Uber, do you go, John?
Yes, Keith. I'm constantly getting driven around town in ambulances.
The women
actually would be really beneficial.
The women you quickly referenced, was one of them the one that you went on a vegan date with, vegan restaurant, and you paid with books?
Have you been talking to Andrea?
We talk.
Yeah. No.
Subscribe to the Hot Mess Comedy Hour.
That was a different girl?
Yeah.
Okay. You paid with books. Did you know you would ahead of time? Do you wait till the date gets up and leaves and go, I got this? Or do you just go, I'm good, I left the books?
No, I thought that other friends that I invited were going to show up and they were going to give me money and I was going to Venmo them cash and we were going to pay.
Right.
Or I just thought it was going to work out, or I didn't give a fuck.
Right. Right. I'm thinking C.
Yeah. Ordered $107 worth of delish vegan food at this amazing... Okay. I feel really bad about this, but I'm going to give them a shout out. Guys, if you're in DC, Farewell Diner.
They need it.
Holy shit. Yeah. It really actually is an amazing place. And I'm so ashamed and embarrassed that I fucking robbed them because I am vegan and it's the last place that I would want to fucking do that to.
But the, what were the books?
Okay. So I was like, all right, there'll be no money. But
right.
So,
but knowledge.
The people I was with did not know I was doing this dine and dash thing because I told them I was treating them.
How many people were you with?
Two. The girl that I met earlier that day, who was going to her car to leave because she stayed at her friend's house, and I was up all night and I was there, and I asked her if she could drive me home, even though I lived around the block, but I just told her I lived someplace else so we could hang out and drive around for a long time.
So like a woman, okay.
Like 20, 25 minutes, something like that. Yeah. And then she eventually brought me back to my place and was like, what the fuck? This is where we were. And I was like, I know, want to come in for tea? And she's like, okay. And so then we had tea and we're talking and laughing, da, da, da. And I'm like, oh, do you want to go? Let's go get breakfast or, you know, or brunch at this vegan place.
Right.
And then the homeless dude that I befriended from the Psychiatric Institute of Washington was like staying at my house. And he came with us and we went there and then we're eating all this stuff. And then when it comes time to pay, like the woman gives me the check and I say like, oh, hold on, I just need a minute.
I say, no, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it's kind of becomes obvious to the people I'm with. I'm like, all right, guys, we're just going to go. And they're like, what? Are you kidding me? I'm like, yeah, let's just go. And so I remember
they
left.
They say, at least leave your books.
No, I was like thinking it would be like a barter system because they were interesting books.
Right. There's no way they would think you might even be coming back because you left your books.
Ooh, I didn't even consider that. But they're like, oh, they must be coming back. He must be coming right back to pay. He left his books.
And what were the books that it would make sense to them?
There's a book called Afro-Vegan, okay, which is about the vegan movement in Africa.
Okay, that could help them.
And, you know, Noam Chomsky book 9/11, first edition.
Okay, first editions are hard to come by sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. Or you can get them on eBay or Amazon. So I left the Afro-Vegan book on the table, and then there's a back door entrance is where we, you know, that's how we made our escape. And then I put I put that inside the check, the Noam Chomsky book. So once you open the check thing, you know, there would be the Chomsky book. And then we
How big was this check book thing?
The Chomsky book is like, if 9/11, it's like a pamphlet size thing. It's like, because it's a compilation of interviews he gave in the weeks kind of after that event.
So not only did they not get paid, they got to look through all the books like he left money in there or something. It's all game.
No, they knew.
No.
They knew I didn't leave any money, Keith. And then we ran to her car. And then when we drove away, everybody was like, fuck. But it was like exhilarating and there were endorphins rushing.
Right.
And then she didn't quite, but like, I was trying to make out with her and she was sort of kissing my cheek back. We weren't making out, but I was like, can we hang out again? And she's like, yeah. And she gave me her number.
Okay. Well, that is nice. Cause you know what? You're obviously the woman's not beholden to a guy, but it's nice when they don't pay for dinner. And you might want to see them again.
Yeah. So that happened. But then, Chemda, what's your take on that? I was like, I looked over and I don't know. It wasn't side eye, but it was kind of like,
No, I'm really just listening.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's weird.
I guess I'm...
it's like a puzzle that we're trying to put the times in.
No, I'm noting that you kept being surprised that she kept going with your suggestions.
Well, that's what I'm saying now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. It's just interesting, there was the same surprise when other women came back with you or were interested in you. So that's just... I'm just noticing that's always a surprise and you seem to want to further the relationship sexually just because this doesn't quote usually happen to you.
Okay. Yeah. No, I guess it's just, well, I mean, I meet people, you know, it's not.
All right. Tell me about this dentist.
Okay. The dentist. So then I'm in, okay. I walked into the next door to where I was living and there's row houses. And I walked into the back door because I thought the whole area was all sort of some sort of, I don't know, outpost or thing that was all like safe houses and stuff like that. Right. That was okay for me to go into. And
sorry, are you able to figure out movies fast? Like, do you know, go like, oh, he's the bad guy. Done. Like, maybe you're good at that.
Yeah, I'm just like, it's all safe houses.
Keith wants to know how this is a superpower for
you. Yeah, because like, to me, I'd be like, well, that's not fair. The movie didn't even let me know that could be coming. And you're like, of course, everybody's the opposite.
I don't know. So I go in this, I go in the back door of that place. And now I'm remembering, I think it was because when I was in Psychiatric Institute of Washington, I saw this advertisement for like a Brinks debit card. So Brinks Security, they also have a debit card.
Okay.
Brinks Security Systems. And I was like, oh, this Brinks card is an important thing to get for some reason. So I ordered one. And then it was like waiting for, I think I ordered it when I was in the hospital from the phone. It's weird. And then
your first phone call.
Yeah. I need a Brinks card.
You're about one free phone call and you're asking the guards, what's the address? Well, no one can pick you up now, sir. I know, but they need the address.
Well, you can make as many phone calls as you wanted to at the psychiatric hospital.
Oh.
It was delightful. And so then, so I'm waiting for that card. And then I see at this place that in the back, there's like a thing that says Brinks.
Right.
So I was like, okay, okay for me to do.
Right.
So I just walk in there.
And you're never nervous, like you know it's for you. Or do you still look in your back, like does part of you know I am breaking in? Or
at that point, I thought it was just fine.
Okay.
I don't know why. And I go in there and there's like there's a nanny in there. I'm like downstairs. She's sort of like halfway up the steps and she's like, hello, what are you doing? And then I just, for some reason, I like looked in the fridge and then I grabbed some soap.
Was she scared? Do you remember her being scared?
She wasn't like yelling or anything. I think she was more, I'm sure she was, I don't know if she was scared or just, I'm sure she was at least anxious, maybe scared, but there wasn't yelling or anything like that. But then I don't know why, I took like a thing of soap or something like that, like hand soap. And then I sat in the, I sat on their couch in the living room for like 30 seconds. And then I thought.
While she's standing on the steps with a kid?
I didn't see any kid.
Oh,
I bet there was one. Maybe there was one upstairs. Mm-hmm. And then someone else came in the back door. And I don't know if it was the dentist woman or if it was somebody else. For whatever reason in my mind at the time, I don't know why, I thought it was some sort of real estate agent. And I thought there was some sort of real estate thread going on. But anyway, then I just walked out their front door and I guess they called the cops. And then I just walked across the street. And I remember specifically being like, oh, I have an appointment with my psychiatrist today and was planning on going to it, which is so weird to be so spun out that I would walk into somebody's house, but then also be cognizant enough to go keep an appointment.
Have you saw a therapist ever during a manic episode? And do you hide the true stories? Because she can't know about the CIA.
I've seen them like kind of ramping up when I maybe been hypomanic or a little before. And there wasn't enough, I guess it wasn't exhibiting enough symptoms to really know what was going on.
That sucks, right?
Yeah, it does suck, yeah. So anyway, I go across the street to this gas station to buy something, cigarettes or something like that. And then the cops found me there and arrested me for breaking into that place. And I stay in a holding cell, these shitty holding cells in D.C. that are really, really bad. Get out the next day.
Do you have the whole system figured out in that you walk in, you're like, I need a 520 form. I have to fill that out right away. You know these people?
Dude, it's more like, can I get a ham sandwich?
Okay.
You know what I mean? Or bologna sandwich. They give you these terrible bologna sandwiches with like the white bread and the bologna and one thing of cheese. And right. You have to like scream for them.
Yeah. How do you keep not being convicted?
Because when it's petty things like that, they'll keep you in holding and then they'll bring you back for another court date to see what's going to happen and stuff like that.
Are you due for court dates?
I am still dealing with some stuff where it's like my charges ultimately are going to be dismissed, but I have to go through something called mental health court, which I'm dealing with. And basically,
isn't that more fair than jail?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. But I mean, I was in jail for 2 weeks. Then I got transferred to St. Elizabeth's, which is a psychiatric hospital, but there's also a wing of it for people that are potentially facing charges and stuff like that. And I had to stay there for 30 days.
You know,
actually, where John Hinckley Jr. Was for a long time.
Congrats. That's a really long time.
The dude who tried to shoot Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm never going to even be the most famous person that
mm-hmm. No way to win. What happens in I picture the judge in mental health court. And he's like, you can either do community service every weekend for 2 months, or we go on a mission. And if you say mission, you're back in fucking jail.
No, if I say mission, he's like, okay, that's legit. You know what I mean? You are. I picture just being like, me and my lawyer being like, he's crazy. And the defense is like, he's sane. Put him in fucking jail. But really what it is you have to go for a number, like 4 months, you have to show up once a month and make sure that you've been, you know, seeing your talk therapist, seeing your psychiatrist and checking in with like a weekly phone call or with a caseworker. And you have to just take, you know, drug tests to make sure you're clean for all drugs.
Why did you and your roommate have a falling out?
Because I didn't know she was home one time and I was in the bathroom and I had this really weird thought that that's the NSA or somebody was going to like hurt my brother, my younger brother, to get to me. And I like started screaming like, if you hurt my brother, I will fucking kill you.
And they can hear you because they're wiretapping everything.
Well, whether they could. Yeah, maybe. Right. Yeah.
Probably spiking their mics though.
Right.
Yeah.
If they can hear you.
I'm off the fucking case. Off. This guy's too. He's good.
So I did that, and it turned out that she was like in her room, and it really scared her. I can't remember everything that I said, but I didn't know she was there. I didn't mean to scare her. She wrote immediately wrote this very long in-depth email to our landlord.
Oh.
Like marking down like the day and time it happened, all this sort of stuff. And then we talked about it after the fact and I was, you know, apologetic. And she said, you know, that she's like, I've heard people deal with this before where you know somebody until you don't. And I just want to all be documented. Da, 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 da. And I can't blame her, you know, but she did know that I have bipolar disorder and we had talked about it. You know, I hadn't hidden that from her and she knew that I was really doing all of these things to try to keep my mental health central to my life and really was doing a lot of stuff.
What goes through your head when you, like now you're better? When is the change? Is it slow? Is it one day you open your eyes?
It's slow. It's not one day.
No? Like one day you don't go, fuck. Like do you, when you're better, do you go, I don't know when I got better. I guess it was in the last 3 days. Like
Okay, better.
Yeah.
I think that it's a combination of time, but also it is medication. It also is if I'm acutely manic and then let's say I'm put on something that's like a stronger medication, then that can help you get out of it. With lithium takes sort of more time to kind of kick in. I remember I was in jail for 2 weeks. Of the first week I was totally manic still and yelling, but then by the second week I was coming out of it and I was like, oh.
Did your roommate have to deal with your yelling?
I didn't have a roommate, but the people had to deal with my yelling because, you know, you could hear it. The cells were close to each other and stuff, but there were other people yelling, you know. Right. I mean?
Would you find yourself looking around being like, these people are a mess?
No. Hey, sometimes, yeah. There was people there that were in really, really rough shape. And the right. D.C. City Jail is really old and
do you and cry? Shitty.
Did I cry?
Yeah, do you cry during any of this when you come back, when you...
Yeah. Sometimes there's a lot of overwhelming emotion that is... and sort of like fear and terror about what's going on or how strongly you're feeling different things. For sure.
So your emotions are going through that same manic depression, sort of like happy and super sad?
Yeah, but it's not, my version of it isn't necessarily like a rapid cycling version where I'm like happy then sad, where it's like an up and down sort of thing. But it can be an overwhelming amount of emotion and have it be more based on sort of fear and anxiety than necessarily sadness at the time. But then the depressions are, that's another whole thing. You know, we always talk about the manias and stuff because that's sort of
the action.
Yeah, there's the action. The depressions are they're there too, and they're awful, you know. And a lot of people experience them, of course, and it's a tough thing because I feel it's so strange to come out of a depression and then think back about how you felt when you were depressed and how bad you felt about yourself, how difficult it felt to want to interact with anybody, to how embarrassed you would feel about everything. The weird thing, I think you guys were talking about this recently, like with the idea of thinking about suicide and stuff like that, like the suicidal ideation, which means not actively attempting suicide, but like the being comforted by the fact that it exists. Mm-hmm. I was immersed in that. And it's so strange to then not be immersed in that and try to reflect back on how that felt so mm-hmm. strongly. So yeah, I think it's important if people can realize that the suicidal ideation is a symptom of both unipolar and bipolar depression, and the symptom will pass. We don't have to act on it. And maybe that could be something that could be helpful.
Do you watch Redacted now?
I've watched some clips, but I haven't been watching it consistently. I also,
does it anger you?
No. No, okay. I mean, I'm proud to have done that show. As
I would say to Lee, I have my shit together now.
Well, I mean, Lee's always been cool with me coming back. It was ultimately management, like, was like, you know, because basically I was under FMLA, Family Medical Leave Act. I had an extended period of time where I was having unpaid leave, but would be able to get my job back. Okay. By the time that was coming to an end, I really wasn't ready to do it. I would have needed more time. I let them know that. And you know, they made a decision to be like, you know, we're going to need to move on. And I don't blame them. I'll tell you, I loved being on that show. I'm very appreciative of the work and the experience. I would have continued to do it, like through the election. Did I want to do it forever? No, I didn't. Is this how I wanted to left? No, but I am incredibly excited to pursue comedy kind of back in this other direction that I was doing before the show. I really kind of, and really doubling down and exploring mental illness in my comedy.
I really want to see that show. I also think the way you just described depression is, so I've had that. I've like, you just stay in it and you are comforted by like, well, I can always kill myself. And it almost like, without minimizing it, it takes off the responsibility of life. Well, I can't do life, but that's okay because I'm going to end it soon anyway. So it sort of like gives me the comfort of, I'm not doing it, but how can I do it? And then I don't have to do it. And it's just this cycle of hardship. And yeah, if I can skate through that somehow and then come to a different place. I think the same thing is heartache. Like if you don't experience depression, you probably experienced heartache also. And that whole feeling of like everyone around you wants to tell you, you're not going to feel this way in a year. You're going to be probably in love with somebody else. You're going to, you know, realize that you guys weren't meant to be together, like all this stuff. But when you're in it, you don't know how to think otherwise. This pain seems like it's going to take forever. And if you can just get past it somehow, get through it or replace it with a different habit of thought, then you can get to that next place. I don't know if depression has that ability, because at least like with heartache, you understand the shortness of it. You know, you understand that this heartache comes from this, where depression feels like it's coming from the logical part of your brain. It feels like you can convince yourself that everything that you're saying is facts, because they are, because there's always something to be upset about. So it feels like the same thing, and maybe it takes a similar thing to get out of it.
Yeah, I don't know, because I don't know you're either. Right. You're right, because that's why when you're out of it, for whatever reason, honestly, it takes exercise to get out of it is part of it. And sometimes for some people, medication, absolutely, but medication and exercise. Physical exercise is just as important.
Well, I think anything is important, right? Because when you're depressed, you're...
I know that. I wasn't trying to sound flippant when I said
no,
that.
No. But neither was I. And I think it's very scary to sound flippant, because it's like, well, you just have to have different thought and get into different habits and go outside and run. But it, of course, when you go outside and run, your energy changes. You are outside. You recognize that there are other things, because if you stay in that depression, again, you build the cage around you so you don't see outside of it. So going to see friends might be helpful. Going to exercise might be helpful. Changing your actual state of energy, which I think exercise does. But to go out and to exercise takes not depression. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like how do you go, I'm depressed, but I'm going to do the things that I could do when I'm not depressed?
Well, it's tough to be in that space also and reach out. And I want you to know both of us. So get Henda's number. Let me mention this. I know, obviously, you know, some people can relate to JFUD, but I do want to talk about something, if you can relate to the roommate or a Chase Bank or the dentist office. Ring. Ring's mission is to make neighborhoods safer. You might already know about their smart video doorbells and cameras that protect millions of people out everywhere. Maybe you got a nice tracksuit, right? Ring helps you stay connected to your home anywhere in the world. So if there's a package delivery or somebody fighting the CIA, a surprise visitor, you'll get an alert and be able to see, hear, and speak to them all from your phone. Oh, no. I shouldn't be telling Jay Fun about this. They can see and hear everything. Well, it's thanks to HD video and two-way audio features on Ring devices. As a listener, you have a special offer on a Ring starter kit available right now with the video doorbell and motion-activated floodlight cam. The starter kit has everything you need to start building a ring of security around your home.
This is such incredible technology, and we've said this before. When we went to the site, we expected it to be, you know, thousands of dollars, yeah, completely unaffordable. And the prices, I compared it before to, you know, when I was shopping again for a TV after a long time, and I'm like, I'm going to get a flat screen. I'm going to find an affordable. Nope. Guys, technology is here, and this is not going to be as expensive as you think it is at all.
Take a look. Just go to ring.com/KATG. We use it. That's ring.com/KATG.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, and I just want to go back for a second. Guanyin is on YouTube listening live and is writing, recovery for depression is nonlinear and very different for everyone. And yeah, I think all I can do is talk from my experience. I think that me setting up accountability, meaning people expect me somewhere at a certain time so that they can come get me if I fall too far into my isolation. So I think when you are feeling better, you set yourself up with systems expecting to possibly check out for a second.
Yeah. And I guess I should say that something that's helpful for me to get out of depression has been throwing exercise into the mix.
Oh, yeah. I don't know how to function if I'm not moving around. Like I can feel my energy change.
Yeah.
How much you lift, bro?
I'm more of a yoga guy. Yeah, I've been doing so much yoga.
You're gone. Wow, that's amazing. So,
but I just need to say, Keith.
Yes.
It's really shitty for you to use my mental illness as a lead-in to read one of the ads. And then to make jokes about it throughout, knowing I can't interrupt you because I don't want to interrupt the ad, but it's fine.
I am told to ask you about goofy grapes.
Oh, God. Okay. It's complicated. First of all, I've been doing a lot of yoga. Okay. I'm not good at it, but
what do you like about yoga?
I like the stretching. I'm kidding. I like,
you look stronger.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I like,
we'll get to your goofy grapes. Sorry. Yeah.
I don't know. I think there's a relaxing component to it. I feel like when I'm doing it, I really am good at staying present because I have that physicality going on. I like, whatever yoga community I've been a part of has always been kind of nice. People are nice. Although that being said, I forgot about this. I got kicked out of fucking yoga.
I started collecting mats.
Worse than that, dude. Oh, fuck. I got kicked out of yoga district in Washington, D.C. This wonderful, aww, like activist-y yoga place, like the yoga place that like is always keeps their classes like really affordable. The teachers are really sweet. I was really ingratiated to that place. I was going for a long time. I was really getting better at it and stuff like that. And you know, there's like a sign outside that says refugees welcome. And then they put up a sign that's like J-Fod not welcome.
It's funny what attracts them though. The yoga studio, we're about to hear a story. A vegan place, cozy. I'm seeing a pattern.
What do you mean?
It's you're more highfalutin things, let's say.
Oh, yeah. I am. I'm some crazy.
But it all goes
trash
with the same philosophy, like Rastafarians are vegan. Mm-hmm. And like he's mentioned Buddhist stuff in the past, and that's yoga stuff.
Yeah, I have referred to mania for me as being misguided, frustrated idealism.
Mm.
You know, where it's like I'm trying to in my head.
That could be your tagline in general, your brand.
John, if at all, misguided, frustrated idealism.
That's right.
Well, F stands for frustrated, fucking crazy.
So what happens in yoga?
Okay, so one time I was in yoga and we did a move that I'd never done before, where you like, you're sitting down and you take one of your legs and you lift it up across your body and you put both your arms underneath the leg. I'd not really done that.
Okay.
And I remember being like, saying out loud at a class going like, to the teacher, I'm like, oh wow. I'm like, this makes me feel like I'm, you know, busting like all of like the the bones and blood corpses of like all of the neocons who will like, you know, that are destroying humanity. And then some woman goes, shh. Right. And I thank God I didn't say anything back. Right. You know what I mean? But anyway, then they were like, what the fuck?
Right. How loud are you saying?
I said it. I didn't scream it, but I said it. Everybody's completely quiet.
It's the one time these hippies don't say everybody's experience is different.
Yeah.
You are not getting that out of this.
And a lot of these classes, it's like, yes, there's men in there, but it's usually like, you know, three or four guys and like, you know, the rest is women. That's just how a lot of yoga classes are. So maybe that has something to do with it that I'm like, talking about violence, you know what I mean? It was fucked up.
Is that what you were talking about? Okay.
What?
I didn't catch it.
He's breaking bones and
okay.
Oh, you didn't hear what I said?
When he said,
I lift up my leg, I feel like I'm exploding the bones and all of the blood corpuscles of like 1,000.
Okay.
Like neoconservatives who would destroy or something. Oh, like that.
Okay.
Yeah, something like that.
I think Andrea's deliberately slowly answering the door so I go crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, she's trying to be quiet so you don't go crazy on her, you psycho.
So then...
Buzzer set me off.
Yeah. Yeah. So then after that class, I remember then talking to the teacher about, because she said she was a nurse, and I was like, oh, well, you know, like there's a video online about like how AIDS was created in a lab or whatever, and then... I was then showing her this video of this song that my friend did for this thing called
Goodness, she just finished working, but okay.
Yeah, for the Topsy Foundation, which actually shows this like antiretroviral medication or something like that that actually can reverse the effects of HIV or something like that. I don't know, but I started acting weird, and then I got an email from this woman Jasmine, who's the owner of all of the yoga districts, who doesn't even live in the country. And then she started like texting me being like, look, you can't come back to yoga until you get like a doctor's note saying that you're okay to come to yoga.
Okay.
And then that process wasn't working out. And then she was talking about, how if I can find somebody in the community that could be like my person I could go to yoga or whatever. But it's just like, it's horrifying to me that I got 86th from the fucking yoga place that I really, really liked.
Right.
You know what I mean? But yeah.
What is Goofy Grapes?
Okay. You know how when I get manic, I think I'm creating my own cryptocurrency?
Yes.
JFOD coin?
Sure.
And I think JFOD coin is going to be popularized.
How's it projecting right now?
It's non-existent.
Okay. So
basically, this non-existent JFOD coin, I thought I was going to create value for it by charging a lot of money for my albums in dollars, but just like a little bit in JFOD coin. Okay. And that would like create this sort of little marketplace for it and start bumping it up whatever. Yeah. I don't understand how money works, which is fine, but which makes this more fun.
But you've heard stories with artists now, they sell t-shirts and give you a free album and that jacks up their numbers. So it's all a little trick. So I follow.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know that. That's good to know.
Well, say you did know it, so it makes sense.
Okay, cool. So then, yeah, I knew that. Goofy Grapes started when I thought I was doing this like hack of the internet back in 2008. I think we've talked about this one where I thought I needed to take control of the internet for a little while in order to keep the neocons from erasing all of their war crimes from against humanity, from their YouTube videos. It's so fucking frustrating.
My brain is so fucking frustrated.
So then that, right? And then I was like, ooh, but you know, I can't let all roads lead back to me. I don't want to get caught. I got to come up with a patsy. Who's going to be the patsy? Goofy Grapes. You know what I mean?
This is like your company. It's going to be that'll cover for you.
Goofy Grapes is a person.
Oh, okay.
Well, it's a character that a comedian friend of mine played on stage once 13 years ago.
And the name stuck with you.
I thought it was the funniest thing ever. Goofy Grapes. It was, and he was just... The only way I could describe him, he was like a confused hobo wearing swim goggles and like a girl's backpack.
Okay.
And he was just like, I'm Goofy Grapes. I don't even know what the fuck it was. I can't remember. But I was like, oh, If I make every, if like
please,
this,
can somebody draw that? Okay, continue.
If this hack gets back to me, it has to look like it's Goofy Grapes, and then it's like, fuck you, the joke's on you. It's Goofy Grapes or whatever, you know. And then I was like, oh, how am I going to legitimize this? So I started like hashtagging all of these tweets I was sending out with hashtag Goofy Grapes to kind of, and then when I was doing all the hacking and copying the URLs and emailing to my friend, which I thought was hacking, I was saying Goofy Grapes all over the place, right? But because that's how you do it. So I'm doing that, and then
oh my god, you're the best.
I hope so. I hope you guys like me.
You're so fun.
Oh, I'm so happy to see you guys. Fuck. So I'm doing that. I'm hashtagging Goofy Grapes all over the place. And then what happens? Okay. So then, well, here's the thing that's ridiculous. I was like, yeah, I was hashtagging Goofy Grapes. So I was using my Twitter account, which is immediately recognizable as being me. Sweet move, little Eddie Snowden. All right, but
Do you have any hacking skills of any kind?
No. I don't even know how to use HTML. Like, I don't even know CSS. So I'm doing that. And then, okay, so then now cut to 10 years or 11 years later. I lost the thread. So what was I saying?
11 years later.
So Goofy Grapes.
And hacking.
Yeah.
CIA.
Okay.
Oh,
okay.
So you wanted to blame Goofy Grapes on something that you were about to do.
Yeah, yeah. So I needed to create the patsy of Goofy Grapes, right? So there's that. That's where Goofy Grapes came from, and I started creating that hashtag. Then I was like, oh, I need to, like, in order for me to popularize JFOD coin, I need to give it some sort of tangible form, right? So that tangible form will be represented by the... Or the hashtag of Goofy Grapes and JFOD. No, the hashtag of Goofy Grapes will be the digital signature for that will be the grapes emoji, like the bunch of grapes emoji.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right? And then whenever I send that to somebody, it'll be like to a friend when I text that, it'll be like a future IOU JFOD coin for when JFOD coins come out.
Wait, you say you don't know money? You broke the code.
What if you just use the money back symbol?
No, that's already been taken. Come on.
But there is an idealistic aspect
to
this
too. You're not a hacker, you're a hack. Stop it.
Yeah, the money thing.
Come on.
At least use the peach or the eggplant.
I thought peaches were like how much ass is coming to me in the future.
Well, that's money too.
That's money too. Commoditizing the flesh. All right, whatever. There is something idealistic about this thing too, because the thought process was like, oh, I need to be sending out these grapes to my friends ahead of time, because then once JFOD coin starts gaining value, like whoever's been kind of helping me or working with me or has been creating content as a comedian that's not getting monetized but is helping, you know, evolution and consciousness move forward, they should get compensated for that retroactively when this cryptocurrency,
And
that's
then I remember, of you. Yeah.
Sometimes you see the finish line.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just hashtag Goofy Grapes. Then years later, there was hashtag Yikes City. Mm-hmm. And that's
when your grapes failed. You're like, Yikes City.
Yeah, Yikes City. The grapes are failing. No, the grapes didn't fail, no, dude. Right. No, the Yikes City was represented by the cherry. And I would give cherries out. But the cherry was like, you know, not as valuable as the grape because it was the second iteration.
When does corn pop come in?
I don't know.
That's so great. By the way, when you do send out some grapes to friends, right? Never mind, I didn't get any. Do your friends write back like, what the fuck is a grape?
Sometimes I'll be having a text exchange and then I'll just throw them in there. They just think it's like my thing. But also what I would
Are you ever mad they never thanked you? Like at the time, like I just snuck it in, but you're welcome.
No, I mean, I don't do it for the thank yous. I do it for the love.
Okay.
You know?
Well, they send other emojis and we're all just having fun.
Right.
Yeah. But then also it's the sort of thing where sometimes I'll send text where it'll be the grape and then it'll be a parentheses, dot, 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 another parentheses, and then the cherry. And that implies that everything in between there is proprietary sort of content and information that I've done
right.
that is even more valuable.
Yeah.
Cha-ching. I completely follow.
See, I think, okay, this is so weird that I think that maybe because it's so weird, that's why I'll keep believing it, where I'm like, maybe it's just so conceptual.
I get you. Do you know, work. Do you know Sue Costello?
I know who she is.
Let me mention this. Jay Fox.
Oh, I didn't get that.
Find him online. She's a fun person. Find him online at The Real Jay Fox. That's Twitter and Instagram.
I just
got
on
Andrea,
Instagram.
Wait, Andrea, why did you send me Grape Seize Your Investigations? And then, because somebody, like now I got like three of those coming at me from different places.
The pictures of grapes?
Because we're live.
Save them.
Specifically the way Andrea wrote it to me, with the spaces in between the letters and everything.
Oh, she's got tricks. She's got her phone. She's got her computer.
Okay. Thank you, Andrea.
His special J-Fod, J.F. O'Donnell, the manic depressive chocolate fountain operator, is available on Vimeo. But do you get it with money or grapes? Can I buy it with grapes that you may have sent me?
All right, you guys, I haven't set up the whole J-Fod coin grape cherry thing.
Okay,
and right now I'd appreciate the money.
Okay, actual regular evil money.
Yeah.
Okay.
Boring money. I'm just trying to live a boring life now.
But yeah. Yeah, just jfodcomedyspecial.com, you guys.
Do you have like paperwork or pictures on your phone that had to do with when you dealt with these grapes? And I'm asking because I'm curious if now that you're not in that manic space, are you able to delete any old paperwork? Are you like, I'm going to save it just in case? I know it's silly, but
there's
I'll save it for a special.
I think it's all texts.
Okay.
You know, so there's just a bunch of friends of mine that have cherry and grape texts. And then one time some years back, I started just sending rows and rows of all these different emojis. I was like, the floodgates are open.
Right.
But I don't know what it meant.
You don't worry that you're oversaturating the not market?
Well, I mean, you know, I would love that. I was just going to respond to that matter of fact. Like, well, you know, Keith, the truth is when you're trying to develop a cryptocurrency, putting a lot of nut into circulation can't really.
Where do you live now?
I'm subletting in Bushwick.
Now, when you say subletting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do people know it?
Currently they do.
Okay.
The back door was locked. but I need a more permanent place. So if anybody hears of anything.
What okay. a great ad for you to live with everybody.
Yeah. Pay no attention to what you've heard.
What brought you to New York? Back to New York? Friends or you just homeless people find their way? Like they're always traveling.
Well, you know, I just wanted to, you know, just as a homeless person, if you've made it, you know, you come to New York. Right. Actually, if you're a homeless person, you should go to like the Florida Keys, right? Or whatever.
Did you ever find like a nice on the streets? Like, I can't believe nobody took this grate.
Like grate?
Yeah, it leaves nice amount of steam. Like, is this open?
Is it Keith? Okay, let me explain this to you.
Jesus Christ.
Keith has an imaginary homeless life.
Okay.
Where he became homeless. He's got a reason. He's got a place to stay. And he's got how it happened. And it all happens that way. And if you've ever been homeless for one day, he asks you about the grate that he fucking... He found the best grate in the city, keeps him warm mm-hmm. all through winter.
Popular spot, but nobody's taking it.
That's right.
It's very interesting.
He's got good plans. The reason why he became homeless is because one more thing happened, like he stepped in gum or something. He's like, that's it.
I'm here now. Yeah.
I live here now.
Oh, it was by choice.
It's close enough to the grate. I see one. I'm good. And then that's Keith's homeless life. And then he also interacts with everybody only philosophically.
Oh.
So he lives, I don't think he's afraid to become homeless, which is what makes him a great entrepreneur.
Wow.
That's why I'm so interested. Do the trash fire smell?
The great thing made me think of a joke I wrote 12 years ago that's not funny.
I'm in.
Okay. Actually, no, you know what? Maybe it is funny.
Well, you had me a time wasting, please. We'll get to Calvin next day.
Okay, I saw a guy on top of the subway laying down on a subway grate and the hot air was rushing up.
Right.
And I thought, wow, this is the only way I could ever think to feel like I'm being farted on by a monster.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. But this is an all new special. The manic depressive chocolate fountain operator.
Why did I tell that? Why did I do that?
You can get it on Vimeo. It's fun to see the process, like Seinfeld on Seinfeld, you know?
But I'll tell you what, this special came out I worked really hard on it. It was a really exciting experience. This dude, Brendan Canty from Fugazi, directed it. And then after it came out, my life kind of exploded. And so I never got to spread the word how I wanted to. And I'm really proud of it. And it's out there. So it's like this little secret. And if everybody wants to check it out, it would mean a lot to me.
Guys, it's a secret.
No, I think you're hilarious. And I always love seeing you.
Yeah. And also, I love you with a microphone, stream of consciousness.
Yeah.
Written, unwritten. I mean, there's a lot of stuff coming out of your brain that is really, really fun and wonderful.
Oh, yeah. Don't be bummed out. He's still nuts. And when he goes, I'm like, it's fantastic.
Well, I love you guys. I'm so, so happy to see you and be back around you guys.
It's so fun.
It means a lot to me.
To get into. Thank you for answering all the questions, silly or otherwise. Honestly,
being able to talk about it and process it and make art out of it and be funny about it is like so important.
Well, in that case, you're welcome.
Well, also, I want to remind everybody that you also did an interview with Andrea and Emily on the Hot Mess Comedy Hour that covers some of this stuff, but definitely from other perspectives and other stories.
Absolutely.
And, you know, it adds Andrea's Burning Man and stuff like that. So if you're not subscribe to our producer's podcast, You Are Mistaken, the Hot Mess Comedy Hour, and always share the podcasts that you like, whether it's this one, the Hot Mess Comedy Hour, the album that you're going to get from JFOD. That is what keeps artists going. And if you want inside our brains, that's the way in. Thank you so much for listening.
Right. And join us tomorrow. We'll be talking to Kevin Cato, who doesn't know, even though he comes early to a studio, he shouldn't buzz the buzzer. All right. We'll talk to you soon.
So sorry.